They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right. Listen, I'm Eric Dorsch. You know who I am. We do this show every week. Russ, for the first time in what feels like forever, but it was probably only a week or two, our opener is correct. Justin Marcus is here. He's here.
Hey, he's back.
What's happening?
We get the bald man back in the studio, ready to go. Jay, you missed a lot, and we're going to get right to it because I honestly, Russ, I don't know for you, but I think last week's best of was one that was just great because it was legitimate debate. It's the first time that we didn't have the same people on a list and we didn't agree about the people on the list. It was a nice open conversation.
Well, it was an open conversation.
Fair enough. Jay, you missed it. Last week we discussed should these certain people be in the Hall of Fame or not, and I want to get your opinion because I know you're very skeptical. You're Mr. Dark Cloud when it comes to a lot of these guys, and I just don't think if you're on a Hall of Fame committee, I don't think any of these guys get a fighting chance. I really don't.
Yeah, you shouldn't put me on any kind of committee.
No. That's why we're trying to out you as the commissioner of fantasy, man. Like, legitimately, some of us could win titles if you weren't in charge. We know it. Let's get right into it. First one, easy one to decide, Ben Wallace. Maybe not as easy as I thought it was.
I texted
it to you guys. I mean, like, yeah, that era of Detroit Pistons basketball, Ben Wallace was the focal point of it. But he was, you know, he had a supporting cast that helped him get there. You know, he's so fringe.
But, all right, so speaking of supporting cast to add it then, would Chauncey Billups be there too? Because he was the other one on my list.
See, if there's a way to bundle them together, like a Geico policy or something, then yeah. But no, I just think individually, no. They were a team that was built of a total of its parts, and individually, no. I don't know.
Okay, no. Carmelo.
Oh God, no. You said Carmelo, and I smiled and chuckled. No.
No. Okay. Julian Edelman.
Okay, so I'm happy we're talking about this now opposed to, like, after or, like, close to the Pats winning the Super Bowl again. Edelman, yeah. I'm not really doing this purely on stats, even though I know that has a big part to do with why someone might get into a hall.
It's
supposed to be the best people ever. But Edelman, yeah. Edelman, yes.
Now, Russ, I know you were a no for Edelman, though, right?
I was a hard no.
You were a hard no. And Russ, if you hear him give a response, you want to butt in on something and start the argument, I am totally with this. That's what we're doing this for. This one, actually, I think Russ will agree with me, was the toughest of all of them to answer because of the sentimental value, and that's Justin Verlander.
Ooh.
See, you're the same. I can tell you're the same way. That ooh does it. We're holding on to a lot of sentimental care for JV and what he did for us, so it's hard to go no, because you put that guy on a pedestal a little more.
Yeah, but he's of good company. He's got a wife who's going to go into a Hall of Fame sort for two good reasons. And JV himself, it's got to be a yes. He's balling now, too. So, yeah, I'm yes on JV. Like, I want to have, like, a three-way with both of them. Yes, I do.
Osgood.
Fuck. That's a hard one.
Dude, can I just point something out? The explicit button we would never have to hit at the start of the show if it wasn't for Justin. Justin kicks it off every time for us. He's our leadoff hitter when it comes to explicit.
Listen. Oh, and my favorite part, too, is Jay, we went through all these names, and yet you sound so surprised and deeply invested in this. I'm impressed by the commitment.
Because Osgood and I have a very love-hate relationship with Osgood. I like Mike Vernon more than Osgood. I like Hasek more than Osgood. I like Legacy more than Osgood. I mean, there's a bunch of goalies that I don't know. There's a bunch of goalies that I enjoyed more and liked them more than Osgood. Osgood is not good, and you have to be great to get into the Hall. So he is good. He's not great, and that plays well with the name of our show.
Yeah, title of the show: They're Osgood, not Osgreat. Okay, I like it. Gonna skip two because they're kind of a. We have to set it up a different way. Kevin Love.
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. I wouldn't even be a committee to elect the committee to review the Hall of Fame people for the NBA players, but. He was a supporting character with LeBron, and before that, I do not even recall where he came from, so I might have to disqualify myself.
He was in Minnesota, where he was actually on pace to be a Hall of Famer because he was putting up ungodly numbers in Minnesota. Okay.
I'll say yes just because he had to deal with LeBron. Anyone who has to deal with that should be in its own Hall of Fame.
That's fair. That's fair. Jay, you don't strike me as a baseball guy, so I don't think you're going to put Victor Martinez into the Hall of Fame.
V-Mart? Nah, I'm good.
All right, Steve Kerr, coach of the Golden State Warriors, has 5 titles as a player.
I mean, yeah, when we get removed from Golden State and everyone being annoyed that they're a part of everything, it'll be a golden era of their franchise, and you have to appreciate that. So I'll say yes.
All right, Donovan McNabb.
Oh, God.
The way he's reacting makes me wonder if Jay even listened to last week's episode.
Right? That's what I'm saying here.
I think he started cutting his grass to our stuff, got bored, and put on, like, Call Me Daddy or whatever.
No. I'll tell you what happened when I cut my grass. I'm not going to do that on the recording because I didn't have a chance to listen to that last week. So it does make it a little more organic for me right now.
Okay.
Donovan McNabb. I'm going to go no. Okay. Too fringy.
All right. Last two. There's a caveat too, but before I do that, Russ, I think you know who the last two are. They're currently playing in Detroit. Is there anybody I forgot from your list?
Frank Gore.
That one was actually a good debate, though. I liked the Frank Gore one was a good leadoff. I will say that. So
yeah, because you know what? If you want to get a reading on like the emotional side of it all, just say the name and the first thing that pops, the first noise that comes out of my mouth is Frank Gore. I almost feel entitled to give him like a badge of honor or anything for the duty that he's done in the league. I mean, that man just. He's a testament of time. So the fact that emotionally I want to say yes just because of how long he's been around.
Well, and he's going to finish his career, I believe. What did you say, Russ? Like top four?
He is the fourth right now.
Fourth most rushing yards.
That's a yes. Time, the term of his career is a yes.
Okay. Anyone else that we're forgetting, Russ?
I had Lundqvist not making it.
Ah, yeah, Lundqvist.
So that's a juicy one because
right?
that whole team – has been stripped down transparently so to the fans, which was beautiful that they did it that way. And all that remains is the king. It's the king of New York. He's just sitting right there. And if he's going to be around, and I don't know if he'll be around during the rebuild, but you're probably right. He probably won't make it. And he's just, you know, a wasted player. I mean, he had some good years in New York, but right now it's not, it's doom and gloom. So that's probably a no. You're right. Yeah. That hurts.
That actually did remind me. I asked Russ this. This one's more of a joke. Do you think there's any chance we see one Sedin brother get in and the other one not?
No, the NHL will package that nice and cute together and bring them in together and make a big PR move about
it. Has there ever been twins elected at the same time? I don't think I'd be very shocked to find that out.
Not that I know of, Russ.
No. Okay, yeah. So Lundqvist, that one was a good one. The last two for me, Jay, and this one is set up as assuming nothing monumental changes. So assuming like the Lions don't go win 6 Super Bowls in the next 20 years, and the Pistons don't become like a dominant franchise like a Golden State. Assuming everything stays relatively the same, they improve, they become playoff teams, they go middle of the road, if not a little bit better. Can you justify Matt Stafford or Andre Drummond getting in the Hall of Fame?
Stafford's got a better case than Drummond, obviously. Stafford's had some hell of seasons when it comes to passing yard totals. Mm-hmm. Stafford had Calvin Johnson. Stafford had, a good play in 2013 that I might talk about later. And, yeah, I think because we are in Detroit, we have a very, very, very harsh bias against our quarterbacks and goalies, but I think Stafford will eventually, like the way you had the caveat set up, I think eventually he will. But say that to anyone in the street in Detroit, you might get smacked across upside the head.
Okay, so Stafford pop probably, Drummond not really.
Drummond, no. Okay. No, he can go pursue his rap career. I'm out on Drummond.
That's fine. That's fine. All right, well, we went across the board on it, and Jay, you helped us answer if guys are going to be. See, if you'd listened to the show, you would have known that was coming.
I'm organically enjoying this right now, trust me.
All right, well, that was that. I think, trust me, in the group text we have, Russ and I both pointed out, something tells me that's a conversation and that's a debate we'll be having again down the road, because there are just so many borderline guys that you could justifiably make an argument for. Russ, the only one that this one came to my mind, I'm going to ask you this one real quick because I didn't ask you it and I had it on the sheet and I forgot to. Would you justify Jordy Nelson going to the Hall of Fame?
No.
No? You think it's just the Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers effect that made him look as good as he was?
Yep. I don't think he was ever the success driver.
Okay.
He wasn't the difference maker. Good receiver, don't get me wrong.
Great receiver.
Not Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I think you saw that when he went to Oakland. He didn't look the same. Mm-hmm. But, okay, that's fair. Moving on, history made last night. St. Louis Blues won their first Stanley Cup, 4-1 over the Bruins. It was great. Listen, this was an absolutely great series. It really was. Jay, I know you're a little disappointed. I know you wanted to see the Mouse Marchand win a Stanley Cup. That didn't happen. But now getting outside of it and looking at it from the sports perspective of it all, what to you was one of the high points of this series? What was the good part of this series for you?
Oh, God. I mean, the back and forth has been great. The goaltending, I think, is very crucial to everything. I love when Boston trots out their fourth line and does that in the opening intro. I thought that was always great the whole time. I don't know. I've been trying to ignore St. Louis because how badly I had rooting interest in Boston, but the Blues, what they did is phenomenal. I took a deep dive looking at the structure of their team, even looking at next year, but the storyline of O'Reilly coming over, Pat Maroon, that's a group of guys all clicking at the same time, and they were able to take down what I thought was one of the best top sixes in the league, which really showed their asses last night. So the storyline of St. Louis is what's really awesome, and doing it with a rookie goaltender is even better for them. So they've got some bright, some bright spots in the future for them next year.
Yeah. Now, did it feel for you like maybe Game 6 was just kind of Boston peaking hot and they just couldn't keep it going into Game 7? Because Boston put up a crap ton of goals in Game 6. They just couldn't do it in Game 7.
Dude, the whole couldn't do it mentality is like that was just stuck on them all night. Like the first period there were three empty nets alone and a couple good puck bounces and it just had to go in. They get one goal, it sparks that whole damn stadium.
Yeah.
It's like they had this piled TNT and they just couldn't get the match close enough, and it was so frustrating to watch, which makes for great hockey.
Oh, yeah,
but I don't know what happened. Like my biggest complaint I have about Boston right now, and I'm not trying to be on a soapbox, but Pasternak is going to get his name renamed to Big Floppy Fucking Noodle, because anytime he has a key moment to clear a puck, dump a puck, or forecheck effectively, he screws it up, and it leads to big moments. And I'm really concerned that Pasternak took, I expected more out of him, and he was on the slide for me. So Big Floppy Noodle, too many giveaways for him, and I think that was a problem for Boston.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, real quick, because you know me, I'm terrible with names. What's St. Louis's goalie's name?
Jordan Binnington.
Now, yeah. I may have heard this wrong driving home from work last night. I had the game on, on the radio through the speakers. Now, I heard the story that this guy bounced around in minor league hockey a little bit. And then in Chicago with the now head coach of St. Louis, it was the interim coach this season, played with him, and then when this guy got the head coaching job, he called and brought Bennington for that reason. Is that correct? Does anybody know that?
Yeah, they just had some familiarity, and Bennington was like the 4 or 5 goalie in the organizational depth chart to begin the year. So, it was just getting a guy that if the shit really hit the fan, I know what I'm getting at least.
Yeah. Safe to say, Russ, this guy's going to get his head coaching job in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think we can take the interim off the tag there. Somewhere around, winning the cup. I think that goes away.
Yeah, I think that helps you out a lot. I think that, they were iffy probably to begin with. I mean, he got him to a Stanley Cup. Let's see what he can do, and then we'll worry about it. But, I think interim's definitely coming off. Russ, in the show we did last week, we talked about guys who were instrumental in these. We did an NBA and NHL, but I pointed out, and you agreed with Ryan O'Reilly, this guy just seemed, the second the Stanley Cup started, to go into a different gear and just never back down. He just kind of put the mindset on and wasn't going to give up until he was holding on to that trophy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all playoffs he was pretty solid. Finishes tied for most points, 8th in points per game. But really, the last 6 games of the series here is where he really turned it on. 9 points, 3 more than anybody else. Most goals, tied for 3rd most assists, just transitions completely out of his defensive role into just this offensive juggernaut. Every bit worthy of Conn Smythe, even though I think it probably should have gone to Rask, but I totally get why I would go to O'Reilly, because, the guy was an absolute monster for this entire series.
Okay. Now, you actually segued perfectly into my next point, because I did hear you mention it. I do want to get your reasoning as why O'Reilly does all this stuff in the playoffs and in the Stanley Cup. Clearly the instrumental guy leading these guys the whole way. In my opinion, the best player on the ice for this series. You think it's Tuukka. You think Tuukka, regardless of the outcome, should have won the Conn Smythe. What's your reasoning? What did Tuukka do that you felt leapfrogs O'Reilly in the way of winning that trophy?
O'Reilly had the best skater series, right, and one of the best skater playoffs of this year. Rask had one of the best goalie performances in the playoffs ever.
Okay.
Right, all but his last game, he was over a .900 save percentage, which is ridiculous on the face of it. But then if we look all-time goalies who've played at least 20 games in the playoffs, this season he had the 6th best save percentage. He had the 2nd best power play save percentage. That's historically good. And you talk about some of the other guys, he's pretty close to J.S. Jaguar, who is the most recent player to win the Conn Smythe in a losing effort. So compares very closely to that. And me saying this about Rask, we still got to game 7, right, of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
If he takes one night off, right, just one, or not even like the 3 games under an .800 save percentage that Bennington had, does Boston make it here? It certainly doesn't make it to game 7, right? He was solely instrumental. O'Reilly, you can argue maybe the finals go differently, maybe not. I mean, there's still other guys like Tarasenko and Parayko that were playing out of their minds as well. But if Rask isn't playing Rask to this level, I don't know that this makes it 6. I don't know that it makes it 5. I don't know that Boston makes it to the Cup Finals, and that is the very definition of a Conn Smythe winner for me.
Okay. And believe me, I'm with you. I'm not trying to, set up a trap here. I'm with you that Tuukka was imperative to this. I see it as O'Reilly, because I think without O'Reilly, this series doesn't make it to 5 for St. Louis. I think that Boston's offense, Boston's ability, and Tuukka being Tuukka is too much for them to have to handle. So I think O'Reilly is the catalyst that gets them over. You get the big goal with Maroon to send them to the Stanley Cup. So I get there's that sentimental there. But this guy just, if you look at it to me, watching these games, the time I did see of it, this guy seemed to be just that step above everyone else for the series. And that's why I think that's where I see the Conn Smythe going there. Now, the nice thing is, we debated this last week, and we were one man down. We have a tiebreaker. We've got a guy who can make the decision. So, Jay, it's almost like the polls we put out. It's this guy, or other. Is it Tuca? Is it O'Reilly? Or was there someone else that the NHL just entirely missed in all of this?
So, I love Russ's stats, and I also love the fact that when you go through those players who had the minimum amount of games played and you bring it up until last night, the biggest change also is the fact that the league has changed. You can't pass a defender and have that defender poke a stick out near your midsection. They're calling a penalty. Scoring is up. The game is all about speed. So Rask is doing that on the heels of the league making their game quicker and more marketable with more goals.
Yep.
It's an excellent point. However, I don't know how I would emotionally feel winning the Vezina, even though my team didn't win the Stanley Cup. And I think I do like the availability that anyone could get it, and it technically who's been valuable to the team. But I would go O'Reilly just because the Blues did win, and I don't know why I put so much stock into that. But I can't wrap my mind around, hey, this team is winning the Cup, and this one player over here gets to get this trophy and wear it like a hat, like Zetterberg.
Well, to me, it feels like a part. if the losing team, if a player from the losing team gets it, to me, it would feel like a participation trophy. It would feel like you did a really good job, but we can't give you a ribbon. We just can't do that. Sorry.
I don't know why my brain can't wrap around that mentality, but like it should. It should even more so with the fact that Russ is bringing up the stats on Rask and the league has changed. Like, that's phenomenal. Like,
oh, absolutely.
That's probably not being talked about enough, and he probably should have won it. But then the other side of me is like, nah, the Blues won. Give all the hardware to them. Let them go hopefully swim in fountains like Ovi did last year. So,
yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, O'Reilly, early favorite to be the next fountain swimmer. Did you see that guy with the Guinness?
I did, yep. I saw that, yep. That's why I asked you guys last night. Is there anyone that's going to touch Ovi? And O'Reilly definitely could do it. I would not be surprised. I know, Russ, I think it was you who retweeted it. I liked the interview where he leads it off saying, like, you know, says the F word and then spends the next minute apologizing to the guy because he's just so excited. But see, that to me is a genuine moment. That's where you're able to relate because this guy's worked so hard. And he's had such a hard time. I mean, years in Buffalo didn't go how he wanted. He had to work it back, and he got there. And now he's at the mountaintop. He's done what any guy who ever played hockey dreams of doing. Screw it being able to contain your emotion. Say whatever you want to say, man. Like, this is your moment. This is awesome.
So, and all the F-bombs they missed in the trophy ceremony,
well, but
too.
They came back from commercial, and the broadcaster even said, we want to apologize for any unkind language that you may hear, but it's impossible to catch. I got one last little talking point here, but I want to ask, and again, I love to throw you guys these curveballs that no one ever can really answer. Do either of you guys know when the last time back-to-back Stanley Cups were won by first-time teams? Like I feel like that doesn't happen very often.
I'm gonna guess sometime in the early 1920s.
it's very possible. It really is. Yeah. I'm thinking about it, and like even going through the last 20 years, everybody that's won the Stanley Cup for the most part had a Stanley Cup prior. Like I really can't think of the last time. Maybe not that. No, I mean New Jersey won it in the mid 90s, right?
In 95.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm bitter about that one.
Well, I know you are. Yeah, we've talked about that. But I'm just, I genuinely can't think of it either. But I just think that's kind of wild. Back-to-back years, first time teams win it.
So isn't it better than the Golden States and the Cavaliers?
Oh, no, I'm not putting it down at all. I'm not putting it down even one bit. I think it's awesome. I just think it's kind of cool and it's kind of crazy, like, you know, what are the odds of that happening? That's pretty crazy. It's awesome.
Especially this late in the history of the league. Like,
yes,
the record of a franchise not winning the Cup is 53 years. Right? So, anyone that's existed for at least 50 years has won.
Yeah.
Longest Cup drought though is Toronto with 51 years. Uh-oh, getting close to the record.
All right, yeah, I like it. I think it's awesome. I think it really is cool. And I think if you're a team that hasn't won a Stanley Cup, you got to have a lot of confidence going into next year. There's a trend going that maybe you can jump on board with. So
can I make one comment about the Blues before we turn off of them?
Yeah, sure.
One thing I thought was interesting, I went on Cap Friendly to take a peek at their current situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like 90% of their dudes that are over 30 years old are expiring in the next year or two. And all of their young assets are locked up for like 5-6 years. And they only have two UFAs coming out next year. And their goalies are on all kinds of short leashes, especially Bennington. And it's just like they won the cup with, like, ridiculous amount of cap space, no Ken Holland specials, and they just did it right. They let their old assets mature, and they invest in their young. And it's just that it can be done, Kenny.
Justin,
good luck with Edmonton.
This is why I no joke. This is why I miss Justin. I said I had one more little thing to bring up. And, Jay, you kind of segued it perfectly for me, so I'm going to let you go first on it. We do this with the NFL. We do it with college. We do this all the time, right, when the season ended. We'll probably do it with the NBA when the playoffs are over. I want to know, way too early to predict, is it Boston or is it St. Louis that has more success next year in the NHL?
Ooh. It's a spicy meatball.
There's a lot of RFAs that are also coming off the books for them, but they get their first swipe at them. I'll go Boston just because I think this year was great for St. Louis, but there's a fatigue factor. I mean, Kuznetsov couldn't come back from all the coke he did, and the Caps couldn't, you know, make a run this year. And I just hockey's tough, man. You invest your body like you did. But Boston was right there doing with them too, so maybe they both will suck. So I go Boston though for the sake of the argument.
Do you think part of it too could be like guys like Ovi, guys like Kuznetsov and Carlson? You spent so much time chasing to get it that when you finally get it, not that the drive goes away, but do you think it's a little harder to maybe muster up that next effort to do it the very next year?
Yeah, maybe even more so the third time, but there probably is a factor of like, hey, I've been to the mountaintop. I got to climb that mountain again, but I already have a picture up there.
Yeah.
You know, that I bet that weighs on some people's minds for sure.
Okay. So you say Boston. Russ, what about you?
I'm also going to go with Boston for one simple reason. I don't think Jordan Binnington is the Jordan Binnington we saw this year.
Okay.
927 in the regular season, 914 in the playoffs. I'm not convinced that's who he is. And if he's a 914 goalie in the regular season next year, still good, still adequate. They're still going to be a playoff team, probably not last place in January again. But I don't know if that takes him here again.
Okay.
Whereas Boston, it's more sustainable. They have some young guys coming up. I imagine Zdeno Chara, as old as he is, you know, isn't going to have a broken jaw forever.
Yeah.
You know, Patrice Bergeron won't be all banged up for a little bit at least. So I'm a little more comfortable with that top line providing enough punch for them to get better.
Okay, that's fair. I want to say St. Louis, I really do, but I'm kind of with you guys. Just looking at these rosters, looking at the level of consistency. Boston's been there quite a few times, St. Louis obviously, for the first time. So you just think that if you're going to make the bet on which of these two teams is going to go further, have more success, Boston's the smart pick, and it's probably the right pick. Across the board, they're just a great team. Jay, like you said, St. Louis managed to do this under the cap, kind of piecing together a team that just worked at the right time to get something done. You know, like they were towards the bottom of the barrel midway through the season, turned it around, right the ship, and they literally climbed from the very bottom to the top. But I think if you're asking them to do that two times in a row, that's a very, very tall order. So I'm going to say Boston. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to see St. Louis have success again next year, but I think Boston's the safe and smart pick on that one. So we'll see what happens with it. Moving over to the other one. Guys, we've got one more playoff series left, and then we're stuck with baseball for the summer. So I'm a little scared. I'm a little worried.
Hey, we got free agency. We got the draft.
All right.
We'll have other stuff.
We'll make this happen. Okay. Russ is here to reassure us, guys. We're all, you know. We're all struggling.
It's the same things I've been telling myself for a while.
Yeah, no worries. Toronto up 3-2. Golden State's back against the wall. They've got to win. They've got to win. Russ, to me, it seemed like, and it's sad to say because you never want to see it, but to me, it seemed like when Durant went down the other night, Golden State used that as their rallying cry to, like, just, we can't lose this game. We can't have him face this injury. And we'll get to Kevin Durant in a little bit because there's another topic we got to bring up. But to you, do you think that Golden State can keep the momentum and keep going, or are we seeing a very quick turnaround and Raptors end it here?
I don't think they can keep the momentum going. I'll answer that part first. I mean, a lot of that was DeMarcus Cousins had gotten benched, and the first time he came in was when KD got hurt, so he came in like his hair was on fire.
Yeah.
And extended the lead to 11 points, and they kind of rode that out for the rest of the game. And there's kind of that, almost that, like when you get hurt and the adrenaline takes over and you're like, no, we're fine, we got this. But now it's been 3 days later, and you're like, ow, that shit really hurt, and then you're limping, and you got to get up for it again, and it's draining, right? Yeah, Kevin Durant only played 12 minutes of this entire series, but it's a blow. You don't get to always say, well, we just get to survive until Kevin comes back, and then we got this. You're facing the very real reality that you lose one game, you're done. And they got two chances to lose that one game. So, yeah, I don't think they can keep that momentum going.
So Raptors in six?
Yeah, Raptors in six. We get back-to-back days where a franchise gets their first championship won on the road.
All right. It's fair. It's nice. Jay, over to you. Going to give you a little bit of a different look. I do want to know Raptors in six, Raptors in seven, Golden State in seven. But seeing this, seeing what the Raptors have done in this, are we maybe kind of seeing a little flash glimpse of the end of Golden State dominance? I mean, they're not going to be able to afford to hold on to Cousins. KD is more than likely not in a Warriors jersey next year. Not to say that losing those two automatically puts Golden State as a terrible team. They still have one of the best backcourt in basketball. They still have some great role players. But is this maybe kind of the on the horizon, we're going to see Golden State kind of level off, and it's not going to be a 72 win team every year?
So first of all, Raptors in seven.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, the current roster as it's built, sure. But I can't trust that there's ebbs and flows in the NBA. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, LeBron's like, deuces, Lakers, I'm going to Golden State now because they can afford me because Cousins and KD are gone. And, like, it's America's favorite soap opera. And they're going to be relevant because they have the market and they have the organization and it's the Oracle. It's the spectacle of their team. So, and it's Clay's team. I'm sorry. It's Curry's team, too. Yeah. So Steph will be there. The pieces can shift around, but they're still trying to put the best product they can. And I don't think, I mean, it's just, there is no end to this unless, you know, the NBA fixes all their problems. I feel like Golden State's always going to be relevant. It's annoying.
It's fine. I mean, and I'm kind of with you. Curry, I think, he's laid the roots in Golden State. He doesn't want to play anywhere else. His family's there. He's got a comfortable, you know, he's huge there. And, I mean, I don't think he wants to uproot his family and move around. I think Golden State is where we're going to see him go coast to coast, assuming Golden State doesn't decide one day, you know, we really don't need you anymore. But I don't see that ever being the case. That being said, I think I'm with Jay. I think it's Raptors in seven. I think Golden State's going to be okay tonight. They're going to come out, you know, on fire, but kind of like with the Boston-St. Louis series, they're going to throw everything they have at them tonight and get the win, and they're just not going to be able to keep that momentum going to a seventh game. It'll be a fun game seven because these are two very good basketball teams, but I just think the Raptors are going to be able to handle this and finish it out. It should be interesting to see. Jay, I like your little comment about LeBron, but to be honest, I don't think they could afford it just for the fact that they still have to pay Steph Curry and Klay Thompson contracts here very soon, and those two are not going to come at a bargain. This is their first, one of their first chances to really make some big money, and they're going to have to pay Steph some serious money to hold on to him. So I mean, we'll see what happens with it. It should be interesting. I'm going to ask you guys to both look into your crystal ball here. This is the last thing we're going to do for the finals here. But Russ, looking in that crystal ball. We said, like we said with NHL, you don't have to win the championship to get the MVP, to get the Bill Russell Award. Who are you giving the Bill Russell Award to, though, when this is all said and done?
Oh, Kawhi.
Okay.
Yeah, hands down, Kawhi. Could I make a case for, hey, Steph Curry one way or the other? I guess. Yep. Yeah, especially if he has, you know, another 40-plus point outing or two, really, and that's kind of what Golden State's going to need if they're going to win. But if we look at the games that they did win, it wasn't strictly because of Steph. It was because they had three guys score more than 14 points. When they don't have that, they've lost every single game.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be a team effort that lends itself to, hey, no hero ball, no special case where the losing team could win it. So I think it goes to the best player on the team that wins. That'll be Kawhi.
Okay. I wrote down three names. Kawhi was obviously one of them. I wrote down two other. Real quick, I just want to get your opinion if you could put an outside chance for him. I actually don't have Curry on the list because I think there's somebody for Golden State that's been more important. I have Leonard down, obviously. I put down Siakam. I feel like he's just been a spark plug, and every time they need him to be. Somebody kind of wears down and gets cold. Siakam just makes that big play, or he keeps them in it, or he says, "All right, let me do it for a few minutes. You take your breath. Get a minute."
Yeah, if he had kept up what he did in game one, I think your case would be a lot stronger. And if he wasn't just being left alone in the corner and missing a shot the last two games, that would probably help too. But he's a pretty clear second or third fiddle there that should be in the conversation at least.
Okay. And then the other one, this is the guy who I think if they win the finals, if game seven goes their way, I think you have to honestly make a very fair argument for Klay Thompson. I think
under the premise that if they make it to game seven and if they win, it's going to be because Klay had to step up huge.
Yeah, I think. Well, but okay. if you go back and look at when he played, because obviously he hurt his leg for a game, missed a game. But if you go back and look at when he's on the floor, he's very efficient. He does not miss. He's very good. He's not the most active guy. He will probably go down in history as known as a spot-up shooter. He doesn't usually, I think at one point he scored 37 points in a game a couple years ago, and he only dribbled the ball 15 times because he just catches and shoots. He's that kind of guy. But I think if you look at his play, when they needed the big bucket, because Steph got cold quite a few times in these last few games. He really struggled. Whenever they needed a big bucket, they would go to Klay, and he'd knock it down. He'd go on a little bit of a run and keep them in it. And I just think we're talking about MVP. We're talking about a guy who is instrumental to winning the finals. Well, a guy that keeps the momentum on your side and keeps you moving, that's that guy for me. It's not going to be KD this year because, obviously, KD hasn't played. He's injured. He's hurt. Steph is going to always be the clear choice because Steph's the best player on that team. You can't argue with Draymond because Draymond is always going. He's a momentum guy. But I just think Klay Thompson is the big guy for this team right now, keeping them moving along. He's never going to go for 50 points in a game because after a while they're going to realize, hey, you just stay right on Klay. Don't worry about it. He's not going to dribble. Just stay on him. We'll take care of the other four guys. But for right now, they're not figuring that out. They're leaving him open. And even when he's not open, he's knocking down shots.
I mean, Klay's incredibly important, but I think he would have to go off and have one of those 50-point games for him to earn it over Steph.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I agree that if they win it, Kawhi Leonard is the clear-cut choice. He came there, they got the title, and he's been the very big reason for it. But I just think if you're going to say, if we're going to have that statement of you don't have to win the title to get the award, I think that Klay is someone you have to at least put in consideration. Jay, you've been listening to all this, or we're assuming you've been listening, so you should be able to give us an answer here. Looking at crystal ball, who are you giving Finals MVP to?
No, I like the idea of Klay. I also hate the idea of obviously giving it to the team that doesn't win. You guys are forgetting about a pretty important Raptor. I mean, Kawhi's been the man, but none of this is possible without Drake. And Drake will probably have to write a song.
Cut his mic.
And go to Twitter and Instagram and put up why he's the MVP of the team. No, I can't do that for real. No, it's Kawhi. It's Kawhi. If Drake even mentions his goddamn name in connection to this team winning in a song, I'll delete my Spotify account. It's got to be Kawhi. He's putting that city on his back. He's becoming the face of that city and of the only Canadian team in the NBA. So
yeah.
If I was to grab someone from Golden State, if the Raptors win, it's Klay. It's Klay all day. You nailed the narrative of KD going down and Klay stepping up, and Russ brought it home by saying KD's got to have Klay's got to have a big night and put up big buckets. So. But I'm hoping for Kawhi. It's a good story over there.
All right. Usually I would play something, but you earned the long one this time.
Why are you the way that you are? Honestly, every time I try to do something fun or exciting, you make it not that way. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be.
Don't misplace Drake's antics and put them on me. I'm just the conduit of what Drake is doing to this conversation.
God. You know, Russ, I would turn your guys' mics off, but you're on his mic off, but you're on the same pot. So if I turn him off, I turn you off. But,
I'm willing to make this sacrifice.
Okay, we're going to do the Eric Dorsch show for the next hour. All right, that's fair. Moving on from it, we'll see how this unfolds. They play tonight. Next show we're guaranteed going to be talking about a championship. It just depends on who we're talking about. We'll see who's right. We'll see who's wrong. It should be interesting. We can't leave the NBA yet, though, because I sent you guys an article the other day about the Pelicans have finally said what they want in return for Anthony Davis. They want an all-star, one or two first-rounders, and to me, that's just too high a price to ask for this guy. You're basically handing over all your chances of success because not a lot of teams have multiple all-stars and first-round picks to just hand over for one guy who, unless you get a guarantee he's going to re-sign with you, you're handing over for a one-year deal. You're renting a car on your trip, and then you're not guaranteed to be able to keep it. So, Russ, I'll let you go first here. Do you agree that this is a fair asking price? And if so, why?
Well, I do think it's a fair asking price, but you make a good point that if he's not going to sign there long-term, why do you make the deal?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna set that aside because, yes, that should just be a stopping point. And, yes, Boston, I'm looking directly at you. Don't give up all of your very deep pocket of assets for a guy that has said he won't re-sign there necessarily. But we're talking about Anthony Davis, who's probably the best at his position in the league right now. So if you want to say, all right, a current all-star, so AD is going to be an upgrade on that guy, whoever he is. I don't care who he is. And then two firsts. Well, with Anthony Davis, we can probably assume that this pick's going to be at least number 20 overall, and that's almost halfway through the draft. You want to talk about notable guys that have gone in the 20s the last 5 years? We're talking about, like, Kyle Kuzma, Pascal Siakam, Clint Capella. I cherry-picked those as the best ones that I could find that went in that area over the last 5 years. It's not a lot, right? You're not going to get that kind of franchise-type player anywhere close to that. Just an all-star designation isn't going to get you anywhere close to that. So you're trading at a discount to try and get volume and try and hit. So give him two first round picks. Give him all your second round picks. I don't really give a damn. This is one of the best players in the league, and if you think you can lock him up for the foreseeable future, make the trade.
Okay, that's fine. One of the ones I've seen is one AD has said he either wants to play in New York or in LA. Obviously, Boston has made a play for him. That's fine. The only one I've seen that's been confirmed by multiple sources is the Lakers have made the offer that they will give Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and a first-round pick for...
It's the number four overall.
The number four overall pick for AD. That's great, but correct me if I'm wrong, and if you are the Pelicans, you're looking at that offer and going, okay, you met one of the criteria we asked for in this trade, because Lonzo Ball is not an all-star. He'll never be an all-star in this league. Brandon Ingram is not an all-star because Brandon Ingram is a small forward. If you're not even the best small forward on your team, you're more than likely not going to be an all-star. So,
good point.
I'm looking at this and going, Lakers, listen, you want to be good. That's a really bad offer to start off with. So I'm looking at it and it's like, I'm looking at both of these rosters. The Lakers don't have an all-star other than LeBron to offer up. That's one thing. That's very, very... I mean, you can argue JaVale McGee, but really not an all-star. Kuzma will be an all-star one day. He's not there right now, and I just don't think that the Lakers can afford to sacrifice him, because when it comes to it, him and LeBron are the two guys that they need to be investing in the future for a long term. So, but then you go to the other side. What's that? Sorry.
No, I'll just say, to that point, the LA Times is reporting that deal is hinging on Kyle Kuzma being included.
That LA doesn't want to do it, but the Pelicans are demanding.
Kyle Kuzma would make that deal a lot more viable, because then you at least have a potential all-star. Kyle Kuzma doesn't look like he's going to drop off anytime soon. But then you go to the other side. The Knicks traded away their only all-star they had to Dallas in the middle of the year. So the Knicks are just literally, like, everyone else didn't want players, so the Knicks took them. The only guys you can really argue is Kevin Knox, and that's about it. They don't have or Dennis Smith Jr., who Dallas traded away to get Porzingis, but there's nothing there. So you're kind of looking at AD going, listen, dude, you just gave us two teams, neither of which are going to do anything to get you that we want. So you either need to give us more teams to talk to, or you need to accept that you're playing in New Orleans for another year, because it's not looking like it. I mean, and as I think about it, Jay, there's only a few teams that have all-stars to spare, Boston being one, obviously. But Boston doesn't really have them to spare. Kyrie is not a guarantee to stay in Boston. A lot of people think he's actually going to go to New York. Same as a lot of people think KD is going to New York. It's one of those things where I can't come up with a team that has enough to spend to get AD and are not going to fall off the planet to acquire him.
Yeah, and that's just trying to think of, like, the theory. Like, Russ is talking it from the draft perspective on the drop-off from the first pick compared to the 20th.
Yeah.
I don't even know what teams would be able to afford that, but I know someone will be dumb enough. There has to be an owner that will pull the trigger on that. And yeah, I get the point on losing draft stock from 1 to 20, but it just seems like, you know, the short-term gain of him versus the long-term goal of your franchise. I mean, teams can still be profitable and be mediocre in the NBA. They don't have to go contend for a championship. They're probably still making money. Mm-hmm. So I'm of the mindset of, someone will be dumb enough to do it, and they're going to mortgage off a little bit of their base future of basic, even off the bench dudes, if the talent's that bad at 20. But it's just like, I have a feeling that it's like, it would be the NBA to do that, to where the Pelicans could just load up like that and potentially make a run that could shape their franchise for so long. And someone will be dumb enough to give them the keys because they want their short term success. I think it's piss poor management if you're the team taking that on.
Yeah.
I will remind everyone that an old, busted Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett were part of a package that got three first-round picks. So, yeah, there's someone dumb enough.
Oh, I mean, yeah, the NBA will always have someone dumb enough to do this, to make this deal possible. I'm not disagreeing with that. I want to move on to the U.S. Open, but real quick, while Jay was talking, I did actually kind of rattle through every team I could in my brain. Russ, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the only team I think has all these pieces that could check it off and still survive being a competitive team, and that's the 76ers.
Well, 76ers are the only Boston team. Could.
But like I said, Boston has to guarantee that Kyrie's even going to stay. Because if Kyrie goes, if Kyrie goes, your only all-stars are Gordon Hayward, Horford's aging, so you really can't count on him, Marcus Smart, maybe, Jason Tatum. So they want an all-star. You're going to lose Gordon Hayward or Jason Tatum. More than likely, Jason Tatum. You're going to lose first-round picks. So, okay, you get KD. That's great. I mean, you get AD. That's great. So now you're hinging everything on Marcus Smart, AD, and Gordon Hayward. And you're getting rid of two first-round picks. So it means the next 2 years, unless you can come up with something crazy in a trade, you're not picking in the first round, so you have to do everything through free agency.
Well, right. Well, and the only way that you do that, if they're Boston, is if you think Kyrie's coming back, I think.
Yeah.
That's the only way you take your one-year gamble, now that AD said, no, I'm not going to sign there long-term.
Well, but see, and that's why I make the argument that the 76ers are the right choice here, because the 76ers' starting lineup is an all-star lineup. You got Embiid, you got Simmons, you got J.J. Redick, you got Jimmy Butler. You got enough there that you can lose one of those guys, more than likely probably Jimmy Butler, and still survive being viable.
Well, I think you'll have to give more there than just, you know, Jimmy Butler.
Well, I mean,
what do you do with Embiid, who plays a very similar role?
But AD can step out more. AD at least can be
comfortable
stepping out
more. He has a better long range game.
So I think AD is your power forward.
Bigs in today's game.
But see, AD is a little more nimble, a little more quick. So I think AD is that guy you can say is responsible. Like, you tell Embiid, the paint is yours. You're almost like a shackle. We know you can go outside, but the paint is yours. AD's responsibility is when they play when you have to play against those smaller lineups. AD's a little more nimble, a little bit quicker. You're our stretch four. You gotta stay out on a guy. Embiid is responsible for the paint. Nothing gets in there. That kind of thing. I think that's your only real option because that's if you're gonna go after AD and you're the only team, like I said, that I think has enough in the tank and in the cabinet to hold on to being a viable team and still lose something. Because they're not going to part with Embiid. They're not going to part with Ben Simmons. Those are the two locked-in guys. I call J.J. An all-star. He's just short of being an all-star. But something like J.J. Redick would probably end up being J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler, and maybe offer up a first-round or maybe one first-round or a second-round pick. And that's a comparable package to me, and it's one that you don't sell the farm for the next few years. Because the 76ers are a contending Eastern Conference team every year.
Well, I think you might have to give up more than that, considering Jimmy Butler's kind of on the back end there.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens.
And those first-round picks aren't going to be worth much, but I almost don't want it to happen just so Tobias Harris doesn't get traded again, the poor damn guy.
Yeah, he's that dude is collecting jerseys, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's making a world tour in, like, the last 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. It's been insane for him.
Him and Boban Marjanovic are just flying around the world together.
Yep. Together, they're packaged too. At least
up.
They're good buddies.
They're packaged up. All right, let's move on. We've talked basketball. We've talked hockey. Well, we've got a really good best of that we want to get to. But real quick, we have to talk U.S. Open. It's a major. We cover it. Jay and I are both golf guys. We love it. Russ doesn't know diddly about golf, but he always comes up with great names. So we're going to do our picks. We're going to save the best for last here. I'm going to go first. I'm going to be pretty conservative, pretty reserved. Phil Mickelson's my long shot. Phil Mickelson needs the U.S. Open to get the career Grand Slam. Phil Mickelson had a very bad day today, but he's still only, last time I checked, 6 shots out of it. So he's not out of it, and he's won at Pebble quite a bit over the years. It's just never been a U.S. Open that he's won it at. So Phil's my long shot. He's got the game that suits it. He's already won at Pebble once this year. He won the Pro-Am there a couple months ago. So he's got a little bit of favoritism there. The other one for me is Ricky Fowler. Ricky's the leader right now. He's tied with Xander Schauffele at 5-under, and Louis Oosthuizen, and I didn't see that. But Ricky still has never won a major. He's one of the favorites to win a major. Jay, I think a lot of people talk now that he's almost kind of becoming the next Sergio, the guy that get close but never win it. Obviously, Sergio won a couple years ago at the Masters. But Ricky's always a favorite every time he tees it up. Everybody wants to see Ricky. He's a likable guy. He's fun. Also, he's going to be in Detroit in 2 weeks for the Rocket Mortgage, so that'll be a good time. But those are my two pretty safe, pretty conservative picks. And, hey, I've got one in the lead right now, so I'm sitting pretty comfortable. Jay, who are you taking as the long shot? Who are you taking as the favorite?
That's when you're supposed to hit the, oh, good for you button.
Okay, that's my fault.
Oh, good for you.
There you go.
God, I wish I had control over that button.
I would never let you have control over any of the buttons in this room.
Just give me one button, please. That's all I want is one button.
You already push our buttons, dude.
Hey, my guys. All right. Well,
let's do it.
I guess let's just talk about me for a second then. My guy, I want Jordan Spieth, man, and he's not even considered a long shot in my eyes, but Spieth needs to come back into the spotlight. The last 3 tourneys, he's played 7th, 8th, and 3rd, so and before that, he was, like, in the 20s and 50s, yeah. So I want Spieth. I want our generation to have our Tiger. Like, we dealt with Tiger, and I know Tiger was kind of in our generation, but, you know, just millennials, just give me Jordan Spieth. I loved watching him win last year, and I need him back in my life. So I'm going Jordan that way. Long shot, and this might be the longest of long shots, but I'm surprised that, you know, Ernie Els has really dropped off the face of the planet. He at one point in time was the number one golfer in the world, and he can't even make some cuts these days. So he's not getting out of Friday. That's not going to get you to Sunday. I mean, that's just easy math. But Ernie Els was someone that, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see him come back. He'll probably retire sooner than he'll win. But Ernie Els won in, like, what, 2012, I think it was? Like
he won the Open Championship in 2012, yep.
He used to be very relevant, and now he's just not even, you know, talked about. And he's got two E's for Ernie and Elvis. I thought that was kind of unique to his name, but nonetheless, Spieth and Ernie Els are my two people.
All right, well, little give for you. Ernie Els is four over. He finished the day four over. So not out of it by any means. You know, you got at least another round to get it low enough. Right now, if 5-under holds, which they're assuming 5-under will be a very good score, one over will probably be the cut. So he's got to go low tomorrow. But Ernie Els has done it before. He'll probably do it again. Jordan Spieth is 1-under through three. So he's just starting his round. He's got time. So we'll see what happens there. But you said you wanted another generation for Tiger Woods. You want another Tiger Woods. Can you maybe make the argument that Rory or Brooks Koepka is that for him? Four championships in 2 years for Brooks, and he's going for his third straight U.S. Open, which no one's ever done, or which no one's done in 113 U.S. Opens.
Yeah, no, Koepka for sure, and then Rory as well, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Rory was put on the face of the PGA game through EA Sports after Tiger lost his sponsorship. I mean,
that's very true.
Those three names are the next fringe, like our Tiger, but you know, it also might not be a fair comparison because I don't know if we're going to see another Tiger. So I want someone to dominate, and I want that guy to be Spieth. But if it was Rory or Koepka, fine by me. Koepka's been balling lately too. So
I will say I think we're going to see another Tiger. I just think no one ever thought we were going to see another Jack, and then Tiger came along. So I think we're going to see another Tiger, but I think that person is either just being born or is like 3 years old playing golf right now. It's not going to be someone in this area. Enough time needs to pass for the next Tiger to develop. I mean, Tiger didn't come onto the tour until 10 years after Jack won his last major. So it's going to take a little while. It's probably going to take a little while. Russ, give us the dirty name.
I'll have you know that this time I actually did some research and took it serious.
Okay.
But before we get to that, last year it was held at Shinnecock and Johnson didn't win. Are you shitting me? He didn't even, he came in third. He didn't even finish in the two hole. What are we doing? That absolutely blew my mind that I had not been able to point that out before. For as often as I picked Dustin Johnson.
When you read that, did your brain explode? Like, did your brain literally, like, too much pressure in your head?
I giggled like the 12-year-old boy I clearly am.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it was. I got to write that down. I got to bring that up.
Okay. All right.
It's literally his name. but Johnson, again, is my favorite, as he always is.
Oh, yeah.
This time it comes with a little more backing. Obviously, won a couple pro-ams here at Pebble Beach. Had the lead in the final round last time the U.S. Open was at Pebble Beach. Ended up falling completely apart, but I won't mention that too much. he's also top five in every major strokes gained category except strokes gained around the green for this season. So I probably don't need me to tell you that dude's playing really good, and I'm gonna keep riding him there. But I tried to see for my long shot, all right, who's the horse for the course, right? Tried to look at it, and all right, rough's projected to be about 4 inches thick. Pretty big one. Typically, you know, U.S. Open, Pebble Beach, smallest greens, or at least on the smaller side. So, hey, if you get stuck in that rough, you want to ram it in there? You want to thin out strong? No? Any of these working? So my long shot, I ended up going with a guy who's first in strokes gained around the green, 18th in putting, because I think striking and putting are going to be really big with some of those things that I mentioned, and expected to be windy. So I took one of the guys that's supposed to be one of the best wind players going right now, and that's Lemony Snicket's cousin, Mr. Brant Snedeker.
That's actually who I clicked like an hour ago when you sent me that text. By the way, thank you so much for saying that 4 inches is thick. I really appreciate
it. Where'd you get your 4-inch thick line from?
What's that?
What?
I want to know where you found out that it was 4 inches thick.
Well,
read about the conditions.
Yeah, I read about the conditions. To be specific, I mean, I write for Roto Baller for hockey. Mm-hmm. So it was natural for me to check out their PGA stuff, and they did a lot of like course analysis there, and that's where I read it.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's good.
Solid field report.
I'm not going to lie. This might be one of the best picks we've made, because every one of these guys, except for Ernie Els, has a chance to probably win this. No, listen, I got nothing. Listen, I picked Phil Mickelson, and that's not saying a lot either because they're roughly the same age. But of everyone else, we'll take my and Jay's long shots out, just to be fair. Ricky's 5-under. Jordan just started his round as 1-under. Dustin Johnson's had a hard day today, but he's even, and he didn't play terribly. Brant Snedeker is on his sixth hole, and he's even for the day. So These are all guys that are not out of striking distance. It's very possible for them to do it. So we'll just have to see. All I can say is Russ did research, so I'm even more scared, because without research, he gets it right every time. So it's a little horrifying to know that I watch golf every weekend. I text Jay probably every weekend about golf, and somehow we can't come up with a winner. Jay, we might need to form an alliance here and just literally crunch the numbers.
I'm all for it. We can form a team. We'll take Russ down.
All I can say, Russ, is you do need to just, like, when you have some time and you need to get to sleep because it'll bore you to death, you need to watch a little bit on Bryson DeChambeau. This guy is your spirit animal. This dude does nothing but, like, analytics and statistical stuff. He's got like some kind of I can't even think of the word. He's got a giant ass math degree. Let's put it that way.
A giant ass math degree.
I
a master's in giant ass math.
No. He's got a PhD in giant ass math degree. Okay. I know what he has. I can't. It starts with a P. Physics. Thank you, dear God. I don't know how I couldn't think of that word. He has
giant ass math.
He went to SMU. Yeah, that's all I could come up with. He's into like the physics and all that. He breaks down everything. The dude had a protractor in his yardage book so he could measure stuff out. This guy is Russ playing golf, in my opinion. Just all about the numbers.
That's an oxymoron if I've ever heard of one.
Well, exactly.
Russ playing golf.
Well, this is if you ever decided you wanted to play golf, this would be you. He's got notepad on notepad of golf and all that, and it's all mathematically broken down, which for those of you who have never seen Russ has a nice yellow notepad that it used to be yellow. I don't know if it's yellow anymore.
The new one is yellow.
Okay. We've seen the inside of this. In the year and a half he had it, there wasn't a line or a corner that didn't have something written on it on every single page. This guy is meticulous. You're Bryson DeChambeau, dude. I'm telling you, you've got to look into this guy. He's going to become your spirit animal. And he dresses...
He's a giant ass math specialist.
That's what he is.
He has a giant ass math.
It really bothers me that I couldn't think of physics. It really bothers me that I couldn't think of that.
can I give Russ his surprise real quick before we go to the next topic?
Absolutely.
All right, Eric. So you can play along too. We've been talking PGA funny names. I wanted to be all fair and equal, and I wanted to bring up some good LPGA names.
God, dear God.
So, Eric, if you know any of these, some of them are like before our parents were even a thought process or even born.
Okay.
Let me know if you've heard them, but I want to see if I can get Russ to giggle at least a little bit.
Guaranteed to work. I still giggle at Dick Clapper every time we talk about NHL history.
All right, this might be good then. Maybe not. We'll find out. All right, so the first one's a little bit of a softball. One name that I thought was interesting, the fine lady's name was Candy Kung. K-U-N-G.
That's a real name? Who names your child that?
But I don't know, but Candy Kung was a real name. The next one that I thought was just interesting, Jill McGill.
That's fantastic.
Jill McGill. Okay. This is where we start getting a little deep. All right, next one up. Next one is Dottie Pepper.
Yeah, I know Dottie Pepper. Okay.
Oh, Dottie Pepper.
Dottie Pepper.
That's a comic book character. I love that.
Yeah, Dottie Pepper. I know that one.
All right, next one, which just tickled my fancy. We got Joan Pitcock.
Oh. That's a little
right up in Russ's alley.
Dottie Pepper and Joan Pitcock.
Like, I want to have like a three-way with
both. Oh, we made it four names in.
There you go.
Goddamn. All right, the last two, fire rounds. We have one Shirley Spork.
Spork,
S-P-O-R-K.
All right, Jay, you said you have one more. If you don't say the name I think you're going to say, I'm going to laugh at you.
Oh, God. All right, you're probably not. This is an oldie. Her name is Helene Wadsworth.
Okay, all right. Oh, I know the name. I don't know. I figured he would have gone right for Paula Creamer. But
I
fully expected Paula Creamer to be on your on yours.
I knew that one. I was stuck between Pitcox Sports and Wadsworth, so I went old school LPGA.
All great, but yeah, Paula Creamer just seems like a giggle name for Russ. It really does.
I'm sure she was a great golfer to be memorable. But man, that's a great barista name.
She's still playing. She's only like 30 something. Yeah, she might be her 40. She's still playing. Yeah, she's still on the tour. And that's golf with
America's most average engineer.
All right, guys.
I am looking her up now.
Go for it, man. She's actually not that bad looking. She's cute.
The Pink Panther. That's a fantastic nickname.
Yeah. No, she's a good golfer. She's a very good golfer. All right. This is we're going to do our best of topic now, and this is one I've wanted to get to. Like, this one to me has potential to either be one that we're all on the same page and it's not that interesting, or one where we're going to fight tooth and nail. And that is the greatest play in Detroit sports history. Greatest play. There's a lot to go from. We're already putting honorable mention as the brawl between the Avalanche and the Red Wings. That can be an honorable mention right away. We all love it. I'm going to lead this one off because if I don't, Russ is going to steal mine. but also because I'm almost going to present you with what I think can't be beaten. And then I want to see if someone can beat it, because I wrote down quite a few. I'm only going to give you my one, and then I'll put some honorable mentions in there. But to me, I don't think this play can be beaten because of the ramifications of what it led to and because of the moment that it happened and the fact that when it happened, there was nothing to compare it to. And that, to me, is Tayshaun blocking Reggie Miller in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2003. I don't think anything can beat the Tayshaun Prince block of Reggie Miller for one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in Detroit sports history.
Ooh, that was the Pistons moment I had.
What's that, Russ?
That was the Pistons moment that I wrote down.
Yeah.
That is a good one. That's immediately what comes to mind, and it probably got Tayshaun a couple extra contracts towards the end of his career.
It probably did, but it was one of those ones that, to this day, I don't think you can go when they show like some of the best plays in SportsCenter. Every once in a while when they do like recaps of years past, you see it because it was that big of a play. Reggie Miller had an entire half court on Tayshaun, and he hawked him down and just swatted that ball out of the air. And I went through a lot. I thought of a lot of plays. Just to me, that one, every other play I came up to try to, you know, make a comparison for, I couldn't beat it. I couldn't beat it. My honorable mentions are Darren McCarty against the Flyers.
You bastard.
Well, I figured that was going to be there. I only had three honorable mentions. It was Darren McCarty against the Flyers, Stafford throwing that touchdown against the Browns with a dislocated shoulder.
You bastard again.
And Chauncey half court against the Nets to extend it and keep the keep their playoff hopes alive. I have other ones, but the other ones are probably ones you guys are going to name, so I'm not going I'm not going to shoot it. I guarantee you guys at least have one of the other ones I have. But so for me, this is me presenting my argument. I want to see someone beat it. Tayshaun Prince blocking Reggie Miller is the greatest play in Detroit sports history. Russ?
So I've got two that I'll present in this specific order because of how you made your argument there.
Okay.
What the Reggie Miller block, you know, ended up representing and what they ended up going on to do is hard to beat. And I'll say that because it's an iconic moment and it really helped build something. I think another one you mentioned, though, the McCarty goal, if we're talking about ramifications, like that sealed the win in the Cup final in the last game.
Yeah.
To end the Cup drought.
Yeah. Oh, right? It's an amazing play.
Yeah, this ended the Red Wings, right? This cemented what would be a bit of a dynasty for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
And was from McCarty, of all guys, you know, a fan favorite, so it's going to live on in infamy. He deked a defenseman and then the goalie, Darren McCarty. He didn't punch him in the face. He actually made a very skilled play. It was fantastic. And I remember just going, what? Who?
Nope.
Right. And even as what, an 8-year-old at the time? Like, that was fantastic to watch that, mm-hmm. and really was the cherry on top for a championship. So it was even more directly related to what comes next and being an impactful. The year before, if you want to talk about just pure excitement and an iconic moment, yeah. That's Steve Yzerman 2-overtime clapper to knock the Blues out and move on to the next round. Mm-hmm. They waited 81 minutes and 14 seconds for a goal, and all it took was Gretzky to lose the puck and Yzerman to make a moment that will live on in infamy forever.
Coincidentally, Giggity. Another play that I had for honorable mention that I knew someone was going to bring up. So
that's a yep. good play.
I also had the Browns touchdown just to be pure sound clips, and that was the best game that no one watched.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it was also, you're talking about Detroit plays. That, to me, yeah. was the play that endured us all to Stafford. We had to deal with another year of China Doll Stafford, but through that, everybody supported him knowing, guess what? When this guy is given time, given the ability to throw, and needs to make the moment happen, he's someone that can do it. I mean, the guy had an arm hanging off, and he still got up, looked at Schwartz, and said, I can throw the ball if you need me to throw the ball. Yep. Dante Culpepper is 5 feet away going, I'm going to get to play in the NFL again. Never happened for him. So
No, you're 100% right. That is what sold the fan base on Stafford. And it really cemented his status as not a China doll, which was very much what everyone was calling into the radio station to say at the time.
Yeah.
So that was incredibly impactful. End of the day, it was just a regular season win over the Browns in what ended up being a relatively meaningless season. So
absolutely.
Probably doesn't have the impact. So I'm with you making an honorable mention. For what it's worth, that Yzerman double overtime clapper is the one I immediately think of.
Mm-hmm.
So that was going to be my choice. And my two other honorable mentions were Maglio's home run to send him to the World Series.
I had that one on my list as well. Mm-hmm.
Just the picture of Polanco bobbing his head up and down, grounding third, scoring. Like, that's absolutely beautiful. Love it forever.
For me, it's Maglio throwing that arm up when he rounds first. I think that was just awesome. But, yeah, I had that one as well. Great play.
It was fantastic. And then I went a little old school for my last one. Went with Gibson's home run to seal the 84 World Series.
Okay.
Against Goose Gossage. Goose Gossage petitioning to stay in the game. Pitch to Gibson because Gibson had homered off him earlier, and all you hear is he don't want to walk you, and crack on the second pitch, home run, seals the World Series, last World Series the Tigers have had since. That was a direct one that was impactful. It was iconic, and man, we could use another one of those.
Absolutely, no, those are all good. So, to how I'm hearing it. McCarty winning it for us in Philly. That's what you're going to put as your play.
Yeah, I'll go with that one. As far as impact goes, because that ended the cup drought.
That's fair. That's fine. That one is a great contender because while the drought wasn't as long, the only thing I can put it up for is it gave the Pistons their first championship in like 14 years. So
right.
That's what I'm saying. The drought was definitely longer for the NHL. That's I can't argue that one. All right, Jay, you got some big shoes to fill, all right? You mentioned earlier about a little 2012-2013 play. If you're going to present that as your play, all I can say, man, I don't know. I do not know if it's going to be enough to get through, but I'm going to give you your shot, give you your moment. What is your play for the best ever in Detroit?
All right, so I'm gonna take the presentation that you guys have both done here, all right?
Okay.
I only had one play that overlapped with both of your lists.
Oh, really?
And okay. I too was playing the whole cat and mouse game. Like, well, I don't want to pick that one because maybe someone else. And like, I was doing that whole thing too, but I still had legitimate plays. Maglio Ordóñez was the only one that overlapped. I know where I was at. I know where I was eating dinner. I know who my date was to a certain dance we were going to. I've got that locked into my brain. That never going to leave my brain at all.
Okay.
The one that probably doesn't fit it's not the most best dressed play in the room. I had the Malice at the Palace wrote down.
I was at that game sitting about like 10 rows away from that. Okay. All right.
See the reactions you both just gave me? It could be the greatest play, but it doesn't have to like have the results. So that was the only one that maybe is not the best dressed one in the room.
Okay.
Not my play that I'm going to present as my winner, but one that's memorable for me. I went with Franzen's 5 goals in 2011 against Ottawa.
All right. All right.
That season, that team between Rafalski and Todd Bertuzzi, Zetterberg, Cronwall, I mean, they were loaded, and Franzen destroyed Ottawa in that game. And the way that they were passing the puck around, that's always stuck in my head. It's probably a little glorified because his career came short, you know, very, very quickly. But Franzen was something that I was looking forward to as a Wings fan. And when he had that five-goal night, he had a four-goal night against Columbus, I believe in the same season as well. He was the mule, and I missed the dude, and for whatever reason, that stuck in my head for the Wings. But
okay. My
play, Matt Stafford, fake spike versus the Cowboys in 2013.
Him breaking the sound barrier, screaming Riley Reiff's name to get him to get under center. Riley! Just the loudest, most I will say Matt Stafford is great for mic'd up. Great things happen when he gets mic'd up. But, okay.
He is, but it's the greatest play for maybe more so the Lions than the fan base, because between that and the collarbone, it's just like the dude, he earned himself narratively.
Mm-hmm.
A contract for a lifetime with the Lions. And those plays being mic'd up, the fake spike, lean it over, we win the game, spike the ball, run, break someone's microphone, screaming into it. Those are the emotional feelings that fans connect to.
Yeah.
And it paved the way for the rest of his career with the goddamn Lions. And it might not be like a fan favorite moment, but I'll tell you what, the Lions were able to take that and say, oh, look at this man. He's here for us. He'll get black and blue for us. This is a blue-collar player in a blue-collar city, and he is Detroit sports. And it locked him up for a long time where we've been held hostage to his career. And I think we always will be. And maybe it's the best play for the Lions, but that carries a lot of weight with Stafford being mic'd up against the Cowboys in 13.
Okay. All right. With how you break the rules, I fully expect you to say, like, your little league single to win the championship when you were, like, 9. But all are great plays. All are great plays. And from how we all presented them, I think we're going to have a real hard time picking a winner. I do want to present, too, that they can't be in the conversation with the three we just laid out. One, for sure, I think is just one of the greatest plays we'll ever see, but I don't know that it had any consequence or it led to anything other than a guy, you know, being on ESPN, not top plays for the rest of his life. And that's Datsyuk putting a guy literally on skates and putting him on the ground. The other one, I think, is just more sentimental for us. And that's I don't even know who it was against. That's what's hilarious. Zetterberg's shootout goal where he basically just leaned over and tapped it in. Those are just fun for me, but I still think the Datsyuk one was amazing. But that being said, we've got three plays. Coming to an agreement here, I think, is going to be next to impossible. I got to tell you guys came up with two very good plays. I just don't know if they top Tayshaun. I really don't. That's the problem. Mac's goal was phenomenal, especially because it was one of those things where it was almost like the spirit of a scorer just jumped into him for 5 seconds, because the move he made was not one that you'd ever expect from Darren McCarty. It really was not. It was a great play. Stafford's sneak was amazing for the fact that this is they were a bad team, and this was a gamble. If he fake spikes it and doesn't score, he's going to get ridiculed to no end. He probably has a real, real hard time coming back from it. But he took the gamble, scored the touchdown, and it made him immortal here now. He'll always be remembered for that, and it won fans over even more. That, you know what, dude? This guy doesn't care. He's a gunslinger. He's going to do whatever it takes to win, and that's it. Because to be honest, if he spikes that ball, they probably end up having to kick a field goal. We're terrible in the red zone and on goal line situations. So it's a great play. And honestly, I think we can all agree that all three of these plays earned the respective players deals that are going to go on for a long time. But Tayshaun taking out Reggie Miller was just so amazing. I physically remember sitting there watching with my dad, and my dad and I both jumping off the couch and going crazy because this was amazing. The guy was an inch away from headbutting the backboard. He got so high to block this thing. So I'm going to stick with mine. I can't get away from it. I'm going to stick with Tayshaun. Russ, Jay presenting his, me presenting mine. Are you sticking with Mac, or did someone sell you?
Oh, of course I'm staying with mine.
There we go.
I just want to thank Jay for not bringing up the trouble with the snap play. I thought for sure that he'd bring that up.
I stuck to the major sports, but please believe I was like, are we doing college? Because I'll run home with this one all day long.
Okay.
I appreciate you staying to the rules for once.
All right, well, Jay, you got a chance to we've done this one time before in this show. It's like the poll. You got one, you got one, you got other. Where are you going?
I'm such a spiteful man. I have to stick with Stafford. This fucker, he's lined up, man, and it really bothers me. I wish he didn't have some of these places. Maybe we had a different quarterback by now, but I say we leave it up to the Twitter. Let's go to the Twitter machine and let them run it up, because I'm going to stick with Stafford, because I can't stand the man, and he's made his money, man.
Wait, explain to me how you're picking a guy you can't stand. This is the contradictions that go on in your head every day that make me wonder. They're like, I think you lost your hair because your hair was fighting with your head so much it just had to get away. That's, you're that person who's always fighting. You don't make sense to me. You don't. I'm so frustrated right now. I'm sweating, wondering how he can pick a guy he doesn't like as the best play of all time.
Because it's the best trick of all time.
To be honest, though, too, I'm astonished you didn't pick a hockey play. I had you sold out as picking a hockey play to be the best ever. I did not see you going with the Lions. Especially did not see you going with the Lions. It's a great one. So, Jay made the decision. We're putting it to the Twitterverse. We can't agree on this one, which I fully expected us not to be able to agree on. Tayshaun's block, McCarty's goal, Stafford's sneak. Those are your choices. We're not giving you an other, because if we give you another, you're going to come up with one that's better than ours, and I'm going to be really upset. So that's what we're doing. Jay, we appreciate you coming back, buddy. We missed you last week. I'm a little disappointed you didn't listen to the show at all last week, but that's fine. You do what you got to do, I guess.
Hey, I'm here. I'll tell you why I couldn't in a minute, but don't worry. I'm back. Don't worry about me.
Okay, that's fine. I love that he thinks I'm going to stop rolling when we're when we're done. But, Russ, you're here every week, consistent, as I always say, smartest man on this show. You make us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Oh, it's not as much of a task as you make it sound, man. You were teaching me stuff last week, but it's a blast. I had a fun time, and play Gloria.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Awesome.
I love you, Jenna Fisher. You're amazing. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.